Welcome to After Deadline. This is Patrick Webb from the Daily Astorian, and our guests today are Nancy Ross of Astoria, who's from the American Civil Liberties Union. Welcome, Nancy.
Good morning, Patrick.
And Tim Mallory, who's from the Timberland Regional Library System over in Washington State.
Across the Big River.
All right. Welcome, Tim. Well, now we're talking today about banned books because it's been Banned Books Week, and I take it neither of you in favor of banning books?
Not so much.
I've only recommended one in the amount of time I've been in libraries. I've frequently been on evaluation teams, but there was one that had very racist language. It happened to be a book about selling real estate.
Oh.
But I did recommend that that book be pulled from the collection.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like an oddity. Well, we're going to be more on the mainstream book banning issue. And as it's common with journalists to look for both sides to every story, but we didn't invite anyone who was in favor of book banning to this show. Well, Nancy, start off telling us about why people ban books and how does the ACLU try to fight back?
Well, it seems like the predominant reason for banning books are social values that do not meet the family who is challenging or the school district which is banning. And it is far and away religiously based. So like so many things in our society, it isn't good enough that you don't want to take part in a practice. But if you don't think it is socially acceptable, then nobody should take part in it. So you see this in many social issues. You don't want to take advantage of reproductive rights, so nobody should. Or the abortion issue, or the death with dignity issue. And it falls again, of course, with banned books. I don't think it's worthy of reading, and you shouldn't get to read it either.
Oh, okay. Well, now, from a library standpoint, Tim, open access to information is sort of a core value for libraries. But how does the banned books play into that?
Well, we do try to carry a complete selection, as you do. We try to represent both sides of every issue. And by the very nature of doing that, we have materials that offend people because people are frequently on one side or the other. And as Nancy mentioned, they think for some reason the other side should not be represented. So we're very staunch defenders. We accept the input from the public who supports the library, and we do evaluate the materials. And very seldom do we find any reason that we should pull something from the collection.
Well, now, it occurs to me, and I'm just thinking of this as we're talking, do libraries mark books and say this could be offensive to someone in the way that movies have a rating on them? Do libraries commonly do that?
An interesting question. Generally, libraries will start out attempting to not do that. But by the very nature of people wanting to be able to find things, we end up having a children's collection and a teen collection and an adult collection. And they say, well, this doesn't really belong in the children's section. It really belongs in the adult section. And actually what they're saying is they're challenging that book, that they don't think that content is appropriate. So it has this line we need to be careful of, that by just classifying something, we aren't censoring something.
Okay. Well, now, the Timberland Regional Library Group is based in Tumwater, and it includes our local branches here at Ilwaco, Ocean Park, and Nacelle. How do you cope with people that come to you and say, this book should not be on the shelves of our library? What's the procedure?
All our professional library staff have worked through this in staff training, that we're open to listen to what they have to say and say we accept them having that opinion, and then draw the contrast of what would it be like if the opinion that they espouse was the one being challenged. Would they want us to pull their materials? And generally, 90% of the time, people are reasonable in this world. So, well, yeah, I see your point. I don't want my stuff pulled out of the library, so I guess I need to leave the other people's stuff in the library too. And of course, we do have forms and bureaucratic procedures for those who want to push on further into the tangle of trying to get something removed from the library.
And are people successful?
Very seldom. There has to be a very concrete reason. Errors of fact would be a reason we would pull things out. Or as I mentioned earlier, there are some things of incredible bias that we see as not being suitable for being in the library. I mentioned that one earlier. It's the only one I've seen that we've pulled for that reason, but it was a real estate person mentioning several nationalities and saying, well, you just shouldn't sell real estate to them.
Oh, okay.
And using quite inappropriate language to identify these nationalities.
Okay. Well, I hope they weren't British people. I guess a little personal message there. Well, Nancy, in your introduction comments, you talked about people of a religious faith trying to press that on others. What particular faith are we talking about here, and mostly in America?
Mostly evangelical Christians.
Okay. And what have been some of the examples of where evangelical Christians have tried to say that they don't want anyone exposed to views other than their own?
Well, there have been several, actually. And you kind of put me on the spot here, so let me just have a second here to take a look. But I did make a couple of notes of things that were religiously inappropriate. For instance, the Harry Potter series. Wizards and wizardry have come under challenge. It is true of...
Well, don't people think that that's fiction, that's make-believe? Or do they worry that children... What's the worry?
Of course, the Lord's name in vain is probably the largest objection. They will come through and say, you know, 15 times it said God, or it would say God damn it, or terms like that within the book. And those are challenged. And no, people can feel that anything that is different than their value is an affront to their value. But I would attest it is just the opposite, that as a society, we have no better way to learn and to grow and to see from a different view and to be able to see through other people's eyes than in books. There are so few ways that we actually learn through our own personal experiences, through movies and visuals, and through books. Without books, we don't know what it's like to be the child in The Kite Runner. We don't know what it's like to be a Nazi in Germany or a Jew in Germany. So it's important to be able to read both of those sides. And even though you are repulsed by the story, it helps you become a larger person who can look at society and enlarge education and enlarge books and be able to say there isn't such a thing as a bad book.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the Nazi Germany. I read somewhere, and Tim, perhaps you can help me with this, Diary of Anne Frank was banned. Was that because it didn't have a happy ending?
Well, actually, it's not a bad ending.
It's been challenged quite a few times.
On what grounds?
Generally, it's been challenged by groups who want to deny the existence of the Holocaust.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I hadn't gone in that direction. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
And... It has not been difficult to defend keeping that book in the collection.
Right. I imagine that's a classic, although one man's classic is another man's trash.
Interestingly, being banned can be very, very ridiculous. In 1983, four members of the Alabama State Textbook Committee rejected and was able to ban the Diary of Anne Frank under the auspices of it was a real downer.
Oh, didn't have a happy ending.
That's right.
No one singing Kumbaya when the Nazis marched in and took the girl, and that was the end of it.
A real downer.
Yeah. Well, that's almost amusing, I suppose, except that it's really not, isn't it? And hopefully they weren't too successful. I hesitate to bring up bears. My wife says I spend too much time talking about bears, but Winnie the Pooh apparently was an attempt to ban Winnie the Pooh in England quite recently. Was this because of Kanga being not a good role model as a single parent, or Tigger being not a good role model for attention deficit disorder children? Why was Winnie the Pooh banned, for goodness sake? Apparently it's the 22nd most banned book on American lists.
That's really interesting. My total amount of residence time in Great Britain would only be counted in weeks or a very small number of months, so I cannot answer for the British culture. But what we have seen is a number of things have been challenged because they don't show respect for parental authority. There are some very authoritarian people who think any book that show that children or young things, and so not all of these are children, can be free and easy without any consultation with parents or adults in any form.
So perhaps Winnie and Eeyore and Piglet weren't listening to Owl, the older, wiser character. Well, we'll have to move on from that if we're not Winnie the Pooh experts. So I can look at the list of books that has been provided by me by one of your colleagues, Tim, at the library, and I see Steinbeck a couple of times on the list. Hemingway, just about everything he wrote seems to have been banned at one point. Jack London, and To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. That's obviously a classic. I know my subversive wife has taught that at high school level. Naughty her. Why are these books that some people consider classic, why are they banned? Why do people try to ban them?
Well, I'm going to swing the opposite way. So we've talked a bit about who I would consider narrow-minded people wanting to ban books. But we also have politically correct people who are afraid of a book that uses the word nigger, for instance, which was the truth in To Kill a Mockingbird, Gone with the Wind. This is why many of those books, they felt that it would make some of the children in the classroom uncomfortable. You can't change history, and I'm always afraid that if we do, we'll have a good chance of repeating it. But that can often be the case, is there will be objectionable, just single words that they think will make students, particularly at high school level, uncomfortable.
Well, Lady Chatterley's Lover, which was written in 1928, and they tried to ban it for many years, and there was a big court case in England in the early 1960s, and it was ruled, the jury came back and said that it was not obscene and should not be banned. That obviously had a couple of rather unpleasant four-letter words in, but it also had a member of the aristocracy having intimate relations with a lower class person. Is that part of the area where the political correctness comes in that you're talking about?
Of course it is. And it transcends to other books as well. So sometimes the objections might be that animals and humans are regarded equally in the book. And again, you know, back to a religious point of view, that wouldn't be true, that humans should be of a superior nature. So caste is one of the true reasons for banning as well.
Well, you are listening to After Deadline here on Coast Community Radio. This is Patrick Webb from The Daily Astorian, and our guests today are Nancy Ross of Astoria from the ACLU. I believe you're an Oregon board member for that group. And Tim Mallory, who's come all the way from the headquarters of the Timberland Regional Library organization, which includes our libraries here in Ilwaco and Ocean Park and Nacelle. So we're in talking about banned books. And Tim, what are your other thoughts about banned books? When the topic comes up, what comes to mind about some of the books that have been banned, some of the reasons, and your interest level on the topic?
Well, I'm always interested in, as you mentioned before, many of these are classics. That may be the same list Jeff sent you of. We had the 100 best books of all time that somebody, and 42 of the 100 have been banned at one time or another. So much of it is people resent something being put out there. It's almost a personal thing, and they try to couch it in terms of society needs to not have this out there. But it's personally, or sometimes it's the educational thing. Very funny when we were talking about teachers and books. I've been reading a lot on Fahrenheit 451 because we're featuring it all month in the Timberland Libraries. And Ray Bradbury put out the classic edition of that in 1953. And I believe it was in 1955 somebody came out with a cleansed version for use in classrooms. And I think they had removed something like 41 instances of the word damn and replaced them with something else. And of course, Ray Bradbury, really got upset about it and got them to rescind that edition that had been cleansed. And Mark Twain did a very similar thing. Of course, he was fighting rearguard action because so much of his stuff was released on illegitimate presses. You know, he had a very hard time controlling how his things were released. The law wasn't what it is now. We have a lot of instances of people just not liking the wording of a book. As we mentioned before, some things about the topics, and sometimes it's just the format. You know, why did they have a picture of that? There was one, it just had, I don't remember which Christian symbol it was in the book, but they really thought that symbol shouldn't be there.
Okay. Well, now, see, you mentioned the personification of animals and animals that talk, things like that. Isn't that a common device in literature, particularly children's literature, that you tell a story perhaps with a moral, perhaps just for entertainment, but you use the animals as speaking, wind in the willows, etc., and obviously poo and things like that. And people object to that?
They do. The most extreme of people. You're not talking about anybody sitting at this table and maybe not anybody in this city, but maybe there is. But it only takes one person who has that fire in their belly to fight through to the very end before you have something like the 2001 burning of the Lord of the Rings. Burning books in our country. Can you believe
it? Lord of the Rings, because what? What was offensive about that in their eyes?
The magic and the irreverence to Christianity. That it was the opposite of, that it was, it took its own course and its own speaking in languages that weren't decipherable by the reader, and that they were, that they did supernatural things. Mm. And that obviously that wasn't something that they believed was possible, and that it would harm children to read that, to think that that were true, to think that that were possible.
You hear about sort of book burnings from sort of the past, but that sounds like quite a recent incident.
11 years ago.
My goodness, what a scary thought. Well, now, I can't pass up the opportunity to talk about And Tango Makes Three. Here I am talking about animals again, but apparently the story of two male penguins who parent an egg. Children's book sounds pretty innocuous to me. What are your thoughts?
It's one of the sweetest books and stories I've read in a long time. It is a true account of a pair of male penguins who the keepers noticed were trying to hatch a rock. And they held the one male penguin, held that little rock on his feet just like he's supposed to. And the other male penguin took the female role and would bring him food. And the keepers watched all season long, not quite sure what to do about it, but very sweet. And the next year, coincidentally, there was an abandoned egg, the father would not take the mother's egg. And they didn't quite know what to do with the egg, and they gave it to this pair of penguins, who were delighted with their egg and took the best care of it. And when the egg was hatched, the baby was named Tango, and they became a family unit. And it has become the most banned book, primarily, I would assert, because although you can believe that if you send a person to degaying, or whatever it's called these days, that you can change what somebody was into what somebody should be. But you cannot assert that you can change a seagull, or you can change a penguin, or you can change a lion. They are what they are.
So this is based on a true story.
Yes.
And people are offended by it because they think it's promoting a gay parent.
Homosexuality.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I've led a very sheltered life because that one just got by me. Well, I can tell you that And Tango Makes Three is available at the Ilwoko Public Library, or it was the last time I stopped by there. And if you want to read it and make up your own mind, go ahead.
But the important thing about And Tango Makes Three and the challenging of it is you're challenging the truth. It's one thing to challenge something that is a larger-than-life story, and you say, well, perhaps the story being told in that is too far-fetched, could harm the children in some way. But when you begin challenging truth, it's as if you want to alter reality. And how can that ever be a benefit?
One of the lists contained some books, including Brave New World, 1984, Animal Farm. Those are books that I studied in high school. I guess I had a very subversive childhood. thank you to all my English teachers back in England. But why would people try to ban books like that when I'm going to imply that one of the messages from that those types of books is a warning on what could happen in society if freedoms are taken away? Why is that, Tim? Why are those books trying to ban?
Well, right now I'll have to use example from Fahrenheit 451 because that's what I'm putting the most work in on recently. And it shows a dystopian future where some trends that Ray Bradbury could see present, you know, in World War II and the early 50s of tending towards anti-intellectualism and asserting that there is only one correct view, that everybody should be uniform. And in a sense, this book is a warning. And so the people who are interested in espousing those views, they think everybody should behave in one particular way, see this as very dangerous to see what they are proposing extrapolated out into a future that for most discerning people, they would see this is not a future that they want. And, you know, it takes the air out of their balloon that they're trying to inflate right now of having these regulations and keeping things the same for everybody, and the same for everybody should be the way they think it should be the same for everybody.
In the 70s, it was banned specifically for the words "masses will revolt" because it was thought to be a very bad thing for children to believe that actually they could all group together and cause change.
Oh, my goodness. We don't want the people in the back streets of Hammond learning that. Otherwise, my goodness, what could happen? All right.
The 70s are correct. That was too late. I was in Berkeley in the 60s.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Great. And you survived to live the tale, huh?
Loved it. It was delightful.
Well, good deal. All right. Well, we're talking to Nancy Ross and Tim Mallory about book banning, and as we come into the home stretch for this program, I was reading that in the research that Plato, back in 387 BC, tried to ban Homer's Odyssey because it gave Greek ideas of freedom. So it sounds like book banning isn't a new thing. Do you think, Nancy, it's getting better or worse in terms of how many incidents there are and how this sort of trend towards political correctness and if you're not with us, you're against us? Is it getting worse or better in terms of the climate?
I believe it's getting worse. I mean, excuse me, I believe it's getting better. What might make it look worse is that we have a way now of charting all of the challenges, of charting all of the bannings. But in fact, librarians are amazing at talking people off the cliff, people who are irate about their books, and they have a way of a protocol of discussing that with them and helping people to understand that they cannot be so small-minded or short-sighted to only see their points of view.
Okay. Well, Tim, what other examples can you think of books that were banned and that perhaps might amuse our listeners, the reasons that they were chosen and things like that?
The film The Magic Christian was challenged simply because it used the word Christian in the title. Oh. Somebody watched it. That's not a Christian movie. And so they simply did not like the name of the movie.
Because it was deceptive that they purchased it or took it out of the library because of false pretenses and then were disappointed.
Yeah, and frequently, again, it's they want to ban a book by insisting that it's misplaced in the library, by which they really mean it and should be behind the radiator in the director's office.
Well, I'm going to have to go to the director's office next time I'm in the library and go look behind the radiator and see what things I've been missing, because I clearly have had not a full upbringing in learning some of these things. Well, let's talk about Clockwork Orange, Anthony Burgess's piece. The book is, if I recall, a very difficult read because it's written in a language that perhaps not everyone can understand. Let's play devil's advocate. Advocacy of violence, etc. In that film version that I'm perhaps more familiar than the book. Devil's advocate, why should we have that sort of stuff on our library shelves and available in our bookstores?
Because it might be meaningful to somebody.
Well, that particular, I've watched the movie. I had a very difficult time getting the movie because I would go to the video store and they would say, oh, what on earth do you want to get that for? I said, well, because I want to see it. They said, well, it's terrible. You shouldn't watch that. And I said, well, have you seen it? Well, yeah, I have. Well, why can't I see it? Anyway, I did. I watched the movie and I read some critical reviews of it. And then I read the book. And the book, it's an arc. It starts from these boys. You know,
Alex and his droogs. Yeah.
Right. And they go through these drastic routines that they do. But the book winds up with what an empty life they have and how this doesn't have the meaning. It doesn't supply what they want. And Anthony Burgess has a very nice ending to the arc of the story in the book. And when the movie was made, I don't know if it was edited for length or what, but they didn't put that ending on it. The portrayal, it spoke to the culture of that time. There were boys dressing like that who wanted to act like that. And it is a reflection of culture. And if nothing else, it could be a warning to people. But I see no reason for people to be prevented from seeing or reading Clockwork Orange.
Okay. All right. Well, now, Nancy, as we head to the conclusion of the show, what else is the ACLU doing in terms of helping to get the word out about freedoms in terms of not banning books and that sort of thing?
They're a real integral part of Banned Book Week, and they partner with the American Library Association, of course, across the country. This is the 30th year, and there are celebrations going on throughout Banned Book Week all over the place. The ACLU tries to promote and support and send buttons and bookmarks and, of course, have people like me jumping on the bandwagons where I live as well. But do I have a second to name a few of my favorites?
You do, yes.
All right. Little Red Riding Hood banned because she had a bottle of wine in the basket she was taking to Grandma.
Oh, that lush.
That tart. and Charlotte's Web, of course, because she was a talking spider. That's always kind of dangerous.
Didn't one of the main characters, I don't want to spoil it for anyone that's not read the book, but one of the main characters in Charlotte's Web dies.
That's true.
So that must be
that's
a downer.
True.
We can't
that's,
have that.
That's right. And we talked earlier about that, but some of the things that are banned do say things like it's filthy, filthier. You know, Merriam-Webster was banned from the Southern California School District because it had a definition of oral sex.
This is a dictionary.
The Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
Oh, my 10th goodness.
10th edition.
We certainly don't want people thumbing through dictionaries.
Dictionaries. Who knows
words.
What you might learn if you
might.
Look at a dictionary. And Alice in Wonderland was a great one for being banned. It was banned for several reasons, but my favorite was the Mad Hatter's hat had a price tag on it in pounds and shillings. It was 10/6, but people thought that was really a secret code for LSD.
Well, as someone who went through the conversion from pounds and shillings to decimal money, I certainly can claim that it was nothing of the kind. All right. Well, we have been listening to Tim Mallory from Timberland Regional Library. Thank you, Tim, for joining us today. And Nancy Ross from the ACLU. This is Patrick Webb from the Daily Astorian signing off. And my special thanks to Kathy White at Iwako Library for the research that has helped me through this particular topic.